Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
What's up, Gypsy Gang? We're back for another episode, continuing on with our WSX coverage from Melbourne. We banged out a couple of podcasts. Hopefully you've listened to the Josh Hill one. Now it's time to wrap your ears around a podcast with Cole Seely. First time we're getting to do one in the flesh, which is cool. Cole actually did the podcast before we ever had the US studio. We did like the Skype deal through COVID. So this was really cool. He's a guy that I just really enjoy being around. I really enjoy watching him on a dirt bike. And I really enjoy hearing what he has to say. Bit of a tough night for him in Melbourne. He literally got taken out in every single race. So I'm not sure what he has to do to stop that from happening next year. Maybe take a leaf out of his teammate's book next year and just go on the offensive. But nevertheless, he threw a bunch of whips to the crowd in that last moto. But yeah, really enjoyed this podcast. We talked WSX. We talked his, coming out of retirement and his plans for the future. And yeah, I just really enjoyed hanging out with Cole this weekend. We got to watch the 450 races together both nights, which was pretty dope too. So hope you guys enjoy this one. Just also, yeah, massive shout out as well to everybody that came, said g'day, hung out, took photos. Like it was a pretty humbling experience, to be honest, just to see how many of the Gypsy Gang were there. There was so much merch getting around. Made me very, very proud of our little community that we've created. Honestly just fired me up to get back to work on Monday and just keep going. We've got a bunch of cool stuff coming up over the next couple of weeks as well. So I think that's kind of it for that. The first podcast that we're bringing you today is with one of my favorite people, Josh Hill. We've actually figured out that we've just never done one in studio. We're always doing these on location ones. So one of these days we'll get Hill in studio, but nonetheless, one of my favorite people to talk anything dirt bikes with. Before we get into the episode with Hill though, got to bring you some words from our sponsors. And the first shout out we have to give is to the guys at Alpine Stars. But also before I do that, just a massive happy 40-year anniversary to the guys at Monza Imports. Now, they are the company that is behind Alpine Stars in Australia, and we actually went down for their 40th year party on Tuesday. That's why we got down there so early. And it was just mind-blowing to, I guess, get like a bit of a refresher as to just how involved the guys at Monza have been personally in my career. I think the first time I would have walked through the doors at Monza, I would have been like 18 or 19 years old. And that was in my stroke days when I was working for the magazine. And then when I ended up going out on my own and starting MX Daily, those guys were supporting me. I think I run like Alpine Stars gear in like 2007, 2008 in like factory KTM shootouts for stroke and everything. So it was just like crazy cool to see how long those guys have not only been supporting the industry, but been supporting me personally through all of my, my endeavors in the industry. So this ad specifically will be about the Tech 10 boot. That's my choice of boot. And I've kind of contemplated going to the Tech 7s at times. But I think that that's probably one of the cool things about Alpine Stars is that between the Tech 7 and the Tech 10, I really don't think you kind of need to look any further than that. I even wore the Tech 10s all the way up to Cape York, and I know a lot of people will say that maybe wearing a boot with an inner booty for 2 weeks is kind of not as comfortable, but man, I just really enjoy that extra ankle support that you get from having the inner booty. I ride on my toes a lot, which kind of does put a bit more pressure on your ankles, and I just never really seem to have any problems with those boots. They also last forever, and I just, yeah, I don't know, I just don't see myself really changing. I think that if I was doing more, you know, techie enduro stuff like Transmotos, I'm probably going to look at running some Tech 7s in the future. But like for motocross and then that big kind of touring stuff, the Tech 10 is definitely on the money for me. And not to mention the gear and helmets that that complement that entire lineup. Not only that, I mean, if you rode as well, like the Tech Air, the vest as well as the full suit, the guys at Alpine Stars are really pushing the limits in every category. So thank you to the guys at Alpine Stars for helping us bring you this WSX content, and also thank you to the guys at Monza for their support over all of these years. This podcast is brought to you by a group of legends that I would have called, I guess, personal sponsors in a sense, but never officially sponsors of the podcast. The guys at KTM Newcastle, they are Australia's number one KTM and gas dealer, and pretty much any time I order any genuine parts, I go through ktmnewcastle.com.au. Not only do they have an awesome online resource for KTM genuine parts, but they also are, like I said, they're the best dealership when it comes to KTM and gas in Australia. I got a chance to ride the all new KTM models, which I believe that's going to be up on Bike Sales. We did a review for those guys at Conondale, and obviously I've spent quite a bit of time on the current KTM models, and I was really blown away by some of the changes, especially in the four strokes. If you heard the podcast, you know I don't really like the air fork that much, but they've actually made some changes. They're only small changes to the air fork, but they kind of address the problem that I kind of found with them. And the bottoming resistance is now so much better. It's got a lot more positive feel on that fork. I think the new ergonomics on that bike are awesome as well. They've really focused on like pulling them in, making them like a lot tighter and skinnier. And I personally really like the feel of the ergos. And just some like simple stuff as well, which is a big win for me on the new KTM models, is the new foot pegs. They're a little bit lower. They're much wider. You guys have always heard me talk about the Ballard's aftermarket foot pegs, which I always put on my KTMs, but I actually don't even know that you'd need to do that. So there's some significant changes for the KTM range this year for 2023, and the guys at KTM Newcastle have fully stocked those bikes. Another real sneaky one, everyone's talking about the KTM 300. A sneaky one for me this year is that KTM 250SX. I rode the 2022 at Miller's place on his arena cross track, and I was blown away with how good that bike was. And then the 2023 version is even better. That's probably the bike that I would be considering buying if I was buying a KTM two-stroke in 2023. So if you are looking to get yourself a brand new KTM this year, then I would suggest you get on the blower, call Shane from KTM Newcastle, tell him you're a member of the Gypsy Gang, and he is going to get you dialed. The four strokes are in stock right now, and the two strokes are expected at the end of the year. So don't miss out. We're actually in a crazy time of bikes just like completely selling out. So yeah, get in quick. We're also brought to you by the guys at Rival Ink Design Co. You can go to rivalinkdesignco.com. Type in Gypsy in their search bar and you will see that dope custom retro graphics kit that we did for the 350. That bike looks amazing, and I had a bunch of people comment on it the other day at QMP, which was cool. I like having cool bikes. Those guys always deliver. I can't take the credit for it. They're the ones that do it. But you can have it too. They're actually selling that Gypsy kit. It won't just go on a KTM. They can make it fit to any modern bike. If you do get it, tag me, send it to me on IG. I'd be pretty stoked to see what you guys come up with. Rivalinkdesignco.com. They own the game when it comes to graphics. We're also brought to you by the guys at MX Store. They were down in full force on the weekend down in Melbourne. They are Australia's number one for dirt bike parts and accessories. If you order before 2 p.m. on a weekday, you are going to get same-day shipping, which is unreal. Also, you can head to our merch shop at gypsy-tails.shop. Right now, we're doing 30% off when you use the code GypsyGang. You're going to get 15% off with that same code at fisthandwear.com. And we're also brought to you by the guys at crushoz.com.au. Thank you very much for listening to this podcast. We appreciate you all and looking forward to bringing you some new content over the coming weeks. From the gang called Gypsy. Gang and they come and get gang. Gypsy. Gang and they come and get gang. Gang. I'm at a Gypsy gang. Gang. I'm at a Gypsy. I'll do a clap and then Cole, you do one.
That felt like a more solid clap anyways.
I think that's what we needed. Cole Seely is back on the Gypsy Tales podcast, and we're doing it in Oz. Great man. How are you, brother?
I'm good. Good to be here, finally. I've like wanted to come to Australia for the last, like, well, basically since I retired. I was trying to line something up in 19 to come here.
What was the options back then? What was that? Was there, like, a legit deal in the works?
Yeah, it was just, what it came down to was just a gear conflict. Because the team I was talking to was a fly deal, and I had already kind of signed my brand ambassadorship with Troiler Designs, it's been like family over there for a decade, so I was like, I can't leave to do this for 1 year. So
you're one of the rare dudes. It's like a lifer dude with you, right? Which is pretty cool though, right?
Yeah, no, it's super cool. Like, the loyalty goes both ways. Like, Troy, like when I originally signed my deal for 2010, so at the end of 2009, I was still in college in October of 2009, because I didn't have anything lined up. So, like, I was working with Jeff Ward a little bit, and he was good friends with Troy. And I, like, just, like, randomly got this call, like, hey, Christian Craig had gotten hurt. Like, we need somebody to ride Supercross. So it was, like, he kind of took me out of college. And, like, you know, so, like, everything past 2009, I owe everything to Troy.
That's so sick that you can actually keep that perspective and, like, actually stick to your guns on that.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. I've had quite a few deals, like, especially when I was in my prime on the 450s, where I was like, yeah, but I can't leave Troy. Like, it's just, like, I love the guy as a person, and the brand is, you know, it's so cool. Everything he does turns to gold.
Dude, he is the biggest fan too, and like not just Supercross and motocross. Like, we saw him at Le Mans, where like in the Alpine Stars hospitality at MotoGP in Le Mans, and he is just in, and he's like, did you see that fucking Moto 3 practice? Like, he was so just cool, losing his mind. And I'm like, that's why your brand is sick.
Yeah,
like, that's why you make the dopest shit.
Yeah, and he's always an outside the box guy. Yeah, like the flags run on our helmets for a little bit. Like, the colorway, just everything is like, he's always two steps, three steps ahead of everybody. So,
dude, my Troy Lee, like, I raced downhill before I ever got into moto.
Yeah,
and the D2 Troy Lee design helmet for mountain bikes was just like the shit.
Next
dude.
Level.
You had like Sean Palmer. So Sean Palmer is pretty much like, to me, that's Troy Lee.
Yeah.
And then you had Sam Hill when he was on Mad Cat's Iron Horse. And like, just everyone that was anyone in mountain biking had a Troiler Designs D2 helmet.
Yeah, he always hires the characters.
Yeah.
He's such a, like, he's just, his brand, like everything from the design aspect to the riders has always been like so cool.
Even like their headquarters, when you go into the headquarters,
it's
that
like
looks
a,
like so
it's old lumber yard.
Yeah,
it's so cool, and he's like had it for forever. I don't even know if basically since the business started.
You would have probably been one of the only big 450 dudes that ran Troy Lee gear.
Yeah, there was like Fonseca before me.
That's right.
Yeah. There was a few here and there, but I kind of ran the flag for my entire career.
Yeah, that's sick. So that makes sense then, that that'd stop you from coming over.
Yeah.
That's a bummer though.
Yeah, no, I mean, everything happens for a reason. Yeah, and, yeah. You know, hopefully we'll be back here next year and years to come. So, I've never been, so I'm stoked to be here. It's like the city's super cool. The stadium's awesome. The dirt looks cool. So I'm just happy to be here.
Yeah. Well, even when we did the podcast, you talked about like you'd wanted to come out.
Yeah. And then like I was trying to set something up for 2020 and with COVID and everything just kind of got pushed. So,
yeah. You know what you need to do is that Manjum Up race.
I know. I wanted to do it this year.
Yeah.
You lined it up. And but I wasn't in shape.
Yeah.
So I was like, they were like, I was like, I'm not going to just take money and go ride around. Yeah. Like these people want me to go win.
It's
fucking
brutal too.
Yeah.
Like it's such a nut.
That's what I've heard.
Dude, I pulled off the last moto. I pulled off and just like sculled a beer on the side of the track and just like buried my back wheel in the sand. It was like, I'm fucking done.
Yeah.
And then got the marshals are like screaming at me. They're like, you're out of the race. And I'm like, oh, yeah, dude.
Perfect.
Like,
big time
out of the race.
Plan worked.
Yeah. So, but I think you got to definitely get over.
Yeah, I know. I do. It's like coming over here has been like a bucket list career kind of thing for me. So
yeah.
First time being in a stadium would probably treat me right. And then maybe next year we'll line up for something gnarly like that.
So paint the picture for the people that are just listening and have never been to Marvel Stadium. Because to me, like I've definitely been to a lot of Supercross races. There's some dope stadiums in the US, but this is like, I feel like a pretty world-class stadium. It's like the location, the stadium itself, but like the city and where it's at.
Yeah. The whole city right on the water. We're literally walk across the street and you're right into the city. It's cool. It's the vibe. I mean, the weather's been great the last 2 days. I know
which
we got some rain.
Yeah, which is crazy because it's supposed
to be
shit.
But it's been like top notch. Like my wife is like, keeps bugging me. Like, you took me to Cardiff. You didn't take me there. I'm like, I'm sorry. I had no idea it was going to be like this. But yeah, it's sweet. Like I'm stoked to race here. And then I hope we come back like a lot.
So what international, did you do many international races when you were full-time Soupy?
No, I did 3 or 4.
Yeah.
I did one round Paris, one Geneva, one in Torino, Italy. I don't think that happens anymore.
Yeah,
and then London or for destinations.
Yeah.
So I didn't really get to do, like, I was always the kind of guy that was like, I want to do my homework before the series Supercross gets to us. So I put that as a priority. And even when it was like a big check coming in, I was like, I owe this to my team. Like, I want to do well next year and set myself up. So I always prioritize that. But when like the timing worked out and I knew I could get in and get back, I would do it. But it kind of sucked because it sucked like the fun out of it. Like I literally showed up, you know, like go to sleep, wake up, practice the next day, race the next day, and then fly home. Because I was like, I need to get my training done. I need to get my testing done. Like I always put that stuff first. So like Cardiff, my wife and I had spent like an extra 2 days just going to check out the town and checking out London, and then coming over here. This is a little bit more of an in and out for me.
Yeah.
But you know, having the extra 2 days, like they brought us to the wave pool yesterday and took us to lunch on the water, so a little bit more sightseeing. Like I being older now, like I appreciate that kind of stuff a little bit more.
Yeah. And I think me and Hill were kind of talking about this before. I hadn't really thought about it, but there is that grind of like you fly in as late as possible, leave as early as possible, and then you back train. And the reason why you do that is because everyone else is going to do it.
Yeah.
So if you don't do
you're losing time.
Then like you're losing time. Whereas here, it doesn't matter because like everyone's in the same boat. So it's almost like you talk about, you know, like F1 and MotoGP and race, like they can't just test every day. They can't. Like Moto is such a unique sport where like you have a track in your backyard and you just grind it out and like he who grinds the most wins basically. And then this and like you could argue whether that's like a good thing or a bad thing, you know, like that's probably why you see guys retire pretty early, and it's probably, you know, it's probably what has got the sport to a crazy level that it's at right now. But then you ask yourself, like, I mean, how old were you when you retired?
29.
You know, like it's young, you know, when you comparatively to other sports. So it's like you got this where it's like, well, we're here for a week. None of us can really ride. Like we kind of get to have fun and everyone's in the same boat. Like no one's losing time to each
other. No, it feels very equal.
Yeah.
And like you're saying, like that style of racing or like back home, it works for people like Dungy and Villopoto and Reed obviously, and you know, the list goes on. But somebody like me, like I really enjoy like the core values of riding, like getting on my bike and having fun. It sucked the life out of me and sucked the fun out of it. So it just doesn't work for me. Where like this is like, it's like I had so much fun in Cardiff, and I know I'm gonna have a ton of fun here. And like the team, like all the teams get along, all the riders get along. It's just more of like a group effort. Even though we're racing against each other, it feels more like a, I don't know, like a big family down there. And it's a lot more enjoyable. And I think those enjoyable years are what make your career last a lot longer.
Yeah. So how did this whole thing come to be then? And like, when did you decide that you wanted to get back into racing? And because like we just talked before, and it's racing to you is now a little bit more about the fun than just like the, I guess, the mental stress you can put on yourself to, you know, compete. But I guess, when did this start even becoming a thing you're interested in?
I mean, like I said, I wanted to come here, like when I retired from full-time supercross and motocross, I wanted to come here in 19, and I kind of wanted to just kind of, you know, almost what Brayton does, without the American stuff. And just with COVID and everything, it really kind of threw a wrench in it. You know, it just wasn't a doable thing. So actually, I was at, I think it was Anaheim 2 or Anaheim 3 this year, and I was talking to Justin because he's been like a mentor of mine. Like,
the since best I was, dude.
Yeah, he's
the
such a good guy. Dude. So smart too. And he mentioned it to me, and I was like, dude, that would be fun. Like, that's right. Exactly. If I could have like painted a picture of what I wanted to do when I retired, this is it. So he was like, and then I saw Tony's ears perk up. So he, like, him and I kind of kept in touch about it. And I was talked to from another team about doing it, but I really just wanted like a team that has like the foundation there. And talking to Tony, talking to Justin, it just seems like they have all their ducks in a row. And like, they have a really like well put together program, because, you know, they've been doing it for so many years.
Yeah.
So that,
and only getting better too.
Yeah.
To be honest.
No, for sure. And more organization and better riders coming on, and just like the professionalism over the years has just keep on progressing. So, I wanted to ride a 450 originally, but you know, Vince and Justin were already kind of slotted to do that. And they're like, well, we only have a 250 ride available. And I was like, you know what? Like, it's a better way to get my foot back in the door.
Yeah. Yeah.
Lining up on a lights bike. And I enjoy riding the lights bike. Like I always have. So it was just, I don't know, everything kind of just fell into place. And I said before, it's like, I just wanted to have fun. Like that was the main thing. Like I want to have fun, but I want to make sure that the equipment that I'm on is good. Like I don't want to have any questions going into, you know, line up for a race.
The, I think the thing too with Moto Concepts, like now that I'm thinking about it, it's a slow build.
Yeah.
Like they've been at it a real long time.
Yeah.
And I think that you can see teams sometimes that like come and go because it's like just all in. And I mean, I feel like Geneva's probably got the money to go as hard as he wants to go, but building a foundation over years, finding the people that you can trust, like really, like, and Tony, like I was just down in the pits talking to him then, like he's a G, like he's like really got shit going. Like he just went on a roll of like, we change parts every single time that they get out out, like we don't fuck around with this.
Yeah, like, no, he's
like, you know, that's what you wanted to
do. Yeah, if I got a problem with the bike or with the racetrack or anything, like he's gonna be the first one to go to bat. So it's like kind of cool to have, you know, somebody have my back like that. And I didn't really know Genova that well, but I spent quite a bit of time with him before this, and he's like, he's an awesome dude. Like I'm really happy to be working with him, and it, like being around him makes me want to like continue that, you know, that relationship off the track too. It's cool to work for a guy like that for sure.
Yeah, well, he's got like a fair bit going on. Like he's a successful dude,
and he loves the racing. He rides himself, and he does the vintage stuff, and he's really passionate about that, and he's really like family oriented. Like he likes all of us to like get along and all of us to have fun together, and that's what I love. That's what, that was like the core years of Troy Designs.
Probably the Troy Lee thing that you liked.
That I like, before I left in 2014, like the actual team, we had so much fun. Like the 4 or 5 years I rode there, it was like the best years of my life and my career. So to kind of have that aspect back in, it's like makes it so much more enjoyable to show up the track.
Yeah, dude. No, that's so cool. How did it go once you started kind of getting into it, like to get back into the supercross grind? Like, was it hard to get back in shape? Like, did you let yourself get out of shape?
Yeah, I let myself get out of shape because I was only doing like free riding stuff. Yeah, like, going hitting the dunes and then imagination when it would pop up. Yeah. So Yeah, it was a little hard to get into shape like the first month probably. But like I still really like going fast. Like it's still really fun to me to like hop on a supercross track and like hit a set of whoops. Like I would do it all the time because I had a supercross track at my disposal. Like we'd go hit hill jumps and then I'd go hit some whoops. And so I still like had that itch to go fast. It was just like I didn't really have anything to like put it
to a reason.
So I like ease myself into it. Like, you know, I would do like two laps and then like, all right, I'm a little tired. So then I'd do a slow lap and then two more laps. So I like really had like a, I don't know, like a really well thought out way to get myself back into it.
Yeah.
And then as months went on, before I knew it, I was like, man, I'm like back to speed, like trying to throw down motos and comparing my times to other guys. And, you know, having Vince and Mitchell riding with me pretty much every day was cool because I didn't know where to like base myself off of. I was just riding alone, having the time of my life, but you know, it's hard to
know
where you're at.
we got like a local track that's like kind of, it's like a motocross track, but it's like small, tight, and just jumps everywhere.
Yeah.
And I've been only riding motocross track. I never ride this place. And we went, these guys convinced me to go there the other day. And I was like three laps. Like I can go do 20 minutes, like riding around a motocross track. And I did three laps on this place. And I was like, damn, man, this not even supercross, but like it's actually just gnarly when it's just like jump, 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 comes at you fast. Yeah.
And then, first time hitting the set of whoops again, you're like, holy crap. Like they're just going by so fast, but... Yeah,
it's just like a different shape though, right? Like to just like general riding that like you would have been doing before.
Yeah, and you know a lot of the other stuff was just like I do whip contests and it was like 10 seconds of adrenaline, turn around and then do it again. And this was just like constant, but it's so fun. Like I've really been enjoying myself.
Dude, quick sidebar, imagination this year was fucking gnarly, bro.
Insane. Yeah, it just keeps getting gnarlier. Like the first year I went, it was nuts. But like the next year, like the second year, I think was like the biggest gap because I showed up and I was like, what did you do to this place? Like it was like, and I so, you know, I was doing my builds, like my
bike build.
Personal bikes, and I showed up and I hadn't ridden that bike yet. So I was like, oh, I've already done the course. Like it won't be that gnarly. So I'm like, doing a couple of jumps, going back, checking bolts, and then like looking over, and Axel's already like throwing whips over like a 120, and I'm like, oh my god, like I was so out of my element. I like literally like, and they came a day earlier. I had like a stunt job the day before, so I flew out the morning of, and literally like pulled my gear bag out of my rental car, threw my gear on, and started riding, and like freaking out about my bike being okay, like my wheels breaking in. I was. Last year was hectic for me.
And then this, when I saw Berriman hit that jump this year, I was just like, bro, like, that's actually not okay.
I think the setup was like 110 or 120, right? So it's like,
even to jump into it.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. I was like, dude, like that, it just makes the jump before it look tiny. And that's like a big jump to hit. Like if that out here, it would take us like an hour to hit that thing.
Yeah. And just like, I don't get how he gauges those jumps.
I don't get it either. I've seen it firsthand. And, like, I remember last year, me and Ryan Sipes went over to, like, the K-Dubs Kingdom side. And we were like, well, what do you want to hit first? And we just, like, found the easiest jump.
Yeah.
Got that down. And we're like, well, what should we do now? And we're like, let's just wait for the other guys. Because, like, it's terrifying to hit it for the first time.
Well, the thing with TB is that, like, you can see how rattled he is.
Yeah.
Like, he's fully rattled. It's like, even he's not okay.
Yeah.
And then he finds something inside that, like, lets him do it. And I just fully don't understand the level. Like, but that's what, I mean, that's, I think, what makes him, like, a real rare dude. Like, that's like a Travis Rice type of deal. Or, like, you know, he's one of those kind of guys that he's just willing to like literally lay it on the line
for,
like he cares about it that much that it's like he's willing to put all of his personal shit. And I'm just like, dude. Well,
the gnarly thing about imagination too is like Baker, who's building this track behind us, it's like you, like he builds things so perfect, you can go so far in third gear on a 450. Like that we hit like that 160 last year. Rawhaw did it first and I did it second, and I was like, dude, what gear are you in? He's like, third. I'm like, you can go that far in third gear? Like, and then like you hit a 120 in third and you can easily over jump. It's like the lips and the transitions are just so perfect and packed so perfect. It's like, it's scary. Like, you can go far in second gear. 450.
Yeah, dude. It's like too much.
He was probably in third when he hit that big one, I would assume. It sounded like it.
Dude, like, yeah, it sounded like he's like, yeah, wow. I just didn't get it. Yeah. I just fully did not understand it. And just the, like, the level of commitment
that he has. And that's on film, too. Like, when you're there in person, it is so much bigger.
Yeah. Dude, we did Farm Jam in 2020. It was, like, literally the month before COVID pretty much shut the world down. And there was, like, they had this kind of, like, half-pipe deal set up. And the main lip wasn't like that good. They'd only kind of just built it and they'd never built it before. It wasn't that good. But they had this like other thing off to the side. And everyone started like whipping into this. It was kind of like a bowl sort of landing. And everyone's doing it and it looks massive. And then just like one lap, Tyler comes past and just boosts the thing literally twice as high and three times as far. And it's just like, what are you seeing?
Yeah.
Like, everyone else is seeing this, and you're seeing that.
We did a trip to Caneville for a 100% shoot, and, like, I went with Parsons and Bierman, which were, like, the two best dudes to go there with.
Yeah.
And, like, Parsons has been there a lot, so he knows his way around it, and he's obviously super talented. But, like, Bierman just sees shit, and I'm like, where did you find that? Like, and, like, it just isn't, like... Even like from somebody that's pretty good on a dirt bike, like you don't see that.
Yeah.
Like that is like a gift. Yeah. Like it doesn't make sense.
Yeah. So anyway, quick sidebar. I hadn't spoken about it yet, but I was like, dude, like that shit is on a completely different level. Yeah. And then another thing that was awesome as fuck too, was straight rhythm. Like,
yeah.
I feel like that was better than it's ever been too.
Yeah, it was cool. I really wanted to do it this year. It was just like I had so much going on before. And then it was like get home from Cardiff, get ready for straight rhythm real quick, and then fly out the next day to here. So
do you still have that two-stroke build?
I do, yeah. I don't ride it ever though.
is that too nice? Like
I rode it like two or three times after, and every time I ride it, like I get like a scuff on the frame, and I'm like, damn it.
Yeah.
I'm like, it's been like a priority to build another one. I have a 125 that I'm in the process of building, kind of got push it aside for now, but I do want to build another 250 soon.
Do you have to, is your deal with Moto Concepts, is there a Honda thing in there to where you can't ride other bikes, so you have to ride Hondas now?
Yeah, for now, yeah.
Yeah, dude, Hill's got the setup.
Yeah.
Like, he does the KTM, like, and then he just can go ride whatever.
I almost did it, Freese has a really fast 250 two-stroke.
Oh, really?
So I was going to rent it from him.
A Honda?
Yeah.
Sick.
But, it's like I said, it would have just been too much stuff going on.
Yeah.
And like, if I would have got hurt for that and couldn't make this, it would have just, I don't know.
Yeah, it would have put the team in a gnarly spot. Yeah.
So.
Man, Kenny on that.
Dude.
Insane, bro.
Insane, yeah. I mean, it's right down his alley, right? Like to throw like gnarly scrubs and stuff like that. But just like, I was looking at it, it's like, dude, how did he get that much speed for that jump to scrub that much speed? Like,
yeah, on a two-stroke too.
Yeah, that was gnarly.
Well, I feel like we haven't seen scrubs like that in a long time.
No.
Like that made me miss James.
Yeah.
But anyway, back to Supercross. I was just a Moto fan shit. So how was Cardiff for you? And I guess like how was just the experience in general, like, and then maybe the racing after.
It was cool. It was fun. Like it was cool to like get kind of a warm welcoming back. Like everybody's like, dude, we're so stoked to have you here. Like,
that's sick.
Fans and you know the organization itself. So it felt really good for me. I like, even in practice though, I was like, damn it, I'm a 10th off, like freaking out. And my wife's dude, just calm down.
Yeah,
like, like you want to do this cause it's fun. I'm like, oh yeah, you're right. Like I had to like kind of break out of that mode, but the racing was just different. Like when I was dissecting the track in my head before I went out for the races, I was like, all right, like I'm going to, you know, square somebody up here and pass them down this side. And like, when I got out there, it was like all that shit got thrown. Yeah, it was like, all right, I guess we're just taking each other out. So I don't know how this track will be, but like I'm ready for either way. Like if I gotta throw some people over the berms.
Yeah,
Anderson taught me how to do that a time or two. So
go back and watch tape, go watch Jason Anderson highlights and just see you getting taken out.
Yeah, I just gotta be that guy. Like I'll be that guy if I have to. It's never really been my style, but
it's a world,
like,
championship, baby.
I got so frustrated like going to that last one. I was like, I'm done. Like
who were the offenders?
I don't even remember. Like it was literally like I'd be setting somebody up and then somebody else would come down the inside and like I was like, what is going on? It's pissing me off. I've never been so frustrated in my life.
The track was wide. Like, do you think
it was
that
too
probably
wide?
Like, yeah, okay. Because so Hill said that he thinks that like the wide track was sick, but some of the corner markers, like they just didn't have the tough blocks.
Okay. And it was like that floor space, they probably could have done a little better job. It's always hard when you draw it out on paper though and then build it in a stadium. It was just the infield section was really like one line.
Yeah.
And like after I got that down, I was like, I wish I would have just done that from the beginning and then squared guys up after the whoops to pass them in the other lane.
What, like that little S where it had like the kind of the, that three section and then go right?
Yeah. It was just like, it was faster to go like really slow and inside.
Yeah.
It feels really lame when you're on the bike. Like I was like doing it in the last minute and I was like, this feels so stupid. Yeah. But like,
but that was the move.
You don't know. Like that's a growing pain of this. Of this series, right? It's like, okay, now like I tell that to the guys and then, you know, they take it back and, you know, progress from it. Like that's how it's going to go. So, but yeah, it was just like first round, it's, you know, there's going to be a lot of growing pains. And I think from now on, it's going to be good. Like, I think this track, the dirt's here, sick.
It looks good.
It looks so good.
Last year though, it did get dry.
Really hard. I
saw that. Yeah, so I'm hoping. Oh, did you like watch footage from last year?
Yeah.
To, like, get it? Yeah. Yeah, I think, they knew that though. So yeah, it'd be interesting to see, but like being down there on the ground today, it felt a little bit more like there was more moisture in it than last year.
Yeah, so. It kind of has a little bit of sand in it. So we'll see how that holds up. But like Baker, like, builds the sickest track, so it's gonna be good no matter what.
That was one of the cool things about this series, is that I'm like so stoked he's like finally getting a chance to do it.
Yeah,
because I mean, for me, even in the US, like I don't think they should just stick to one track builder for the entire, because it's sort of like, but then I mean, you could probably go either way. Like you could get guys just trying to like out big dick each other and like the tracks just get like out of hand. Maybe consistency kind of is the move, but to have a guy like him with his level of talent and staff and the team that he's built around, to like to not have him get a chance to build like a world-class supercross track that world-class guys race on, it seems like that's like not the move.
I'll never talk shit about any, I know you weren't talking shit, but I'll never talk shit about any of the builders at the supercross, because those guys work their asses off.
Yeah, and it's not like one should or shouldn't, but it's like there's a couple of really amazing people.
Those guys go in on Wednesday or Thursday and then build the track, and then granted if rain comes, watch them cover it and like seeing how much work they put in, I'm like, yeah, sometimes the tracks aren't the best, but at the same time, like,
it's not an easy job.
It's not. From no perspective is that going to be easy. And then they, like, we'll be doing our podium interviews, and they're already, like, with D5s out there
just
scooping
shit up. Shaking it down,
So, but it is really cool. Like, Baker, I used to rent a spot at his place in Florida.
Yeah.
And so, like, I love the way he builds tracks, so it's really cool.
Well, that's the other thing too, is that he's the guy that's building like 90% of the like the practice tracks as well. So yeah, I just think it's like, I mean, yeah, the Dirtworks guys do an amazing job, but just to actually get to a chance to see like these guys do their thing as well, I think that's like really cool.
Yeah, no, for sure, and it's like it's a work of art. Like the imagination, like every just like there's track builders and then there's artists. Like he literally not just like
look at the sides of this track.
Yep, that's what I was just gonna say. Yeah. Like not only where we ride on the track, but on the sides.
Yeah, where you don't ride looks
good. Which is really cool when you're doing a test track, because like if you want to quad something, you can jump off to the side.
Oh yeah.
It like adds a little level of safety that you didn't think you needed.
Yeah. How did you think of the, like, did you go back and watch the event on TV
I'm like in the middle of moving right now, so I was like got home and like started getting that ball rolling, but I saw little bits here and there.
Yeah. I guess I think they nailed it. Like there was some stuff that was so I think like really, really good. Like even the way that they had like laps counting down to where, like, you know, there was just like little kind of details I think that they nailed. But I'm excited to see for tonight, like, for the next couple nights, like the progression that they kind of have, you know.
Yeah, I think like the first one's going to be their biggest learning curve, right?
Yeah.
So I think like taking what they learned there, and then like even it was pretty gnarly going like five laps, 10 laps, like
that's what I think needs to change. That's
yeah,
what I,
so I think we have a little bit bigger of a break before the last one
this week.
Yeah, okay. Which not even like not only from an endurance standpoint, but also like I wanted to change my gloves.
Yeah,
and I couldn't have time, or like, you know, I could swap goggles, but like your gloves get a little sweaty and you're like, I washed out and they were a little dirty. So it was
yeah.
just like little things like that. and maybe like somebody falls over and needs to tweak their bars back or something like that. Like, I think that just that little bit of those extra minutes are going to matter.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, as we talked about with Hill as well, but we had I had a conversation in the DMs with, one of the Gypsy Gang, and he was saying that he reckons they should do the first two back to back and the lights, then first two back to back 450, and then circle back to have like the last lights main and then the last four. I think that it would give you guys more time. I think it'd give people a chance to figure out points, and then all those little things that you've got to take care of in between. And then I think it just like builds up a little bit of like extra suspense around you know, the overall. It felt to me like watching the races that it was like kind of over too quick in a sense, which is, you know, like I just wanted it to kind of feel like that change would just kind of keep me engaged a tiny bit more, you know.
Yeah that's true. But it's cool to see a entirely new aspect, like an entirely new format like showcased like this. So, but yeah, I mean, obviously, like I said, like growing pains, it's always going to be kind of an evolving thing. So I don't know, next year.
Yeah. And fan wise, like, were you, dude, the most romantic shit right now, huh? It's happened before. Yeah,
light a candle.
Yeah, I know. Should we dim the lights right now? It's too bright up in here. Fuck. Where's the champagne? Is that? Oh yeah, fan wise, like, was it cool to see an international vibe? Like, did it feel international?
Yeah, it did. And that was another thing with the broadcast. It looked kind of empty.
Yeah,
it was packed.
Yeah,
like when I say packed, it was like packed. Like, it was the thing was, I think they did it for like a safety issue, because like here you have a little bit of a gap to the grandstands. There was nothing.
Yeah,
so they kind of blocked off the first, like, I don't know, even the whole bottom row in some points.
But if you listen to Instagram comments, that's because nobody wanted to go.
No, dude, it was like from the second level up, it was packed and it was loud in there. Like, when we did rider intros, it was like, I was like, holy crap, there's a lot of people in here. So,
nah, that's it. Well, that was actually the one, my only other point that I like relayed back to the boys today. There needed to be microphones pointing back to the crowd.
Yeah.
Because I was getting videos sent to me all night from people that were at the race. And like, while I was watching it live, and like, I'm watching it on TV and all you could hear is bikes, but no crowd. And then when I was getting sent the clips, like, people were sending me clips of Hill doing the quad.
Fucking everybody, losing. Yeah. And then Kenny did it and everybody lost it. Yeah. It was, I'm telling you, it was like the fans were into it.
That's sick, dude. Yeah. That's like one of just the best things about Europe.
That's what I love about going to other countries. Like, yeah, like racing in the States is cool. The fans are really cool, but like, we're kind of spoiled, you know, especially in California. Like, if you live like where I live, you can go to four.
Yeah. You like, can within, feel it too by Anaheim 3.
Yeah.
Like, you can,
and then you go to San
it.
Diego.
Yeah.
So it's like, I mean, you kind of like, you're spoiled by it. When we go to Cardiff, like,
they're foaming at the mouth.
Yeah. These people haven't probably even seen a lot of us in person. So, that's really cool. Like, and being here, like, I'm sure it's gonna be the same. Like, I feel like I have a lot of Australian fans. Like, I get a lot of DMs and stuff like that from Australian people. So like, I'm pretty stoked to experience that too.
Well, I don't know about Saturday, but Friday night they've sold 20,000.
Oh really? And like, I was wondering how that.
Yeah, that's, well, I thought it'd not do well at all.
Yeah.
But yeah, so Friday night is 20K. So I mean, Saturday night's got to be bigger than that.
Yeah,
I think they had like 35 here last time.
Yeah, it's gonna be rad. And then kind of going down that same alley, like when we go to Paris or when we go to Geneva, like, everybody is so excited. Yeah, it's so cool. And when I was in Italy, Carmichael was there kind of doing like exhibition stuff, and like, still, I mean, I know he's the greatest of all time, but like, still, people are just losing their shit over Carmichael. It's so cool to see.
Yeah, no, it's cool. Like, oh, this was where the Carmichael and Ronnie Mac thing was.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it was like in this stadium that time. Yeah. So like, yeah, people were losing it. Yeah, yeah. I think too. I mean, it's sort of just the perfect time to do events globally. Like, even Red Bud, dude, for Motocross of Nations this year was like mental. So I think that people have kind of been starved as well. Like, dude, Melbourne, through COVID was like the gnarliest city. Like the,
that's what I heard.
That like pretty much 2 years of lockdown there. Like it's
so gnarly.
And then even like we were saying, driving through the streets now, it's like back to just being hectic.
Yeah.
And I had friends living here that would just like send me like where we're staying. Like we're staying like one of the busiest places.
Yeah.
And like ghost town, like complete.
That's crazy.
Complete.
Kind of how
ghost
LA
town.
Was. Too. Yeah. I remember driving through LA because I lived pretty close, and I was like, go from like Orange County to Thousand Oaks, and it was like there's no traffic. I can drive around a Friday. This is sick. But now it's just back to just sucking.
Yeah. Well, but I think that what it's done on the flip side is that now like this will be the first Supercross race, dude. Like people are flying from Perth for this race. Like a lot of people are flying from Perth, and it's a 5.5 hour flight, dude. It's like someone that lives in New York flying to Anaheim one. You know.
That's sick.
So I really feel like it's gonna be like a pretty cool vibe.
Yeah, no, it's gonna be rad. I'm stoked too, just to be able to ride tomorrow, Friday, in front of everybody a little bit. Yeah. I think we get like a little intermission practice.
Yeah.
And then yeah, get to hang out for a little bit, and like our press day in Cardiff was cool, but it wasn't like nobody was really allowed. So
yeah,
it'll be cool to kind of interact with people for 2 days, not just one.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's true. Way eh? Like, and I think it probably gives you a chance to like be a little bit more relaxed into it as well, because I feel like on a 1 day schedule you sort of, it's just like all business because you kind of just don't have much time, right?
Yeah, yeah. So probably watching the rust fall off me while I'm out there. Get to ride in between, but it'll be fun. I'm pretty excited to throw some whips over the
Is the ramp stuff fun too?
Yeah, it's pretty cool. It's a little short.
Yeah, like, that's, I think, what it's Hill
like
was
a
saying
60 instead of a 75 or whatever, but it's you can still get pretty upside down off of it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Kenny was getting pretty.
Yeah,
pretty. Dude, some of the photos. This music is terrible. What are we
like, Sarah McLachlan or something?
I think that's what they were playing before.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
What are you doing, Ryan? Are you going to tell him? Doesn't really help, eh? Yeah, she sucked. We'll just chill for a second.
Yeah.
This track's like starting to come to life a little bit. Nope. What did you think of the cardboard boxes? Is that the move?
So much better.
Is it really?
Yeah, so much. I mean, there's like been times where I hit the ground and like
a tough block saves.
Is it Sarah McLachlan?
Is it?
Yeah.
God
it's
bless.
Like when you donating to save dogs and stuff.
For just $2 a day, you can help Cole Seeley get to the next World Supercross.
Yeah. Yeah, no, they're good because like they do save you sometimes, but a lot of times they hurt you.
Yeah.
Like landing on one off a triple or like grabbing one off the lip of a triple.
Bad
sucks.
News bears, yeah.
Yeah. Like I've grabbed one with my foot peg off the lip and like just framed it. Now we're in a nightclub.
Now we're in Ibiza. So yeah, so you think that's it's actually like a good thing?
I think so.
It probably looked on TV. It looked kind of kooky.
Yeah,
like it looked a little bit like sideshowish. It
doesn't affect the racing though. Which is
no,
good.
No. I just think like visually, like if you're a hardcore supercross.
No, no.
Fan,
I mean like it doesn't like if you hit a tough block in a race in supercross, it affects you.
Yeah,
if you hit
them
here, it doesn't affect like. It's, you're not like worried about it really.
Yeah, yeah.
So
yeah, well, you think of dude Jet and Faulkner, that was like pretty much like tough block
kind of, yeah,
you know, like he just clipped it going up that up ramp that caused like a pretty big deal. So I just think the optics of it aren't right, you know what I mean? Like people aren't. I think we're really used to
maybe we need
seeing,
a double box
maybe. Yeah, yeah. Just to, or like, yeah, I think it's good. I actually think This is a thing I've thought way too much about. It's fucking tough blocks. I actually just think we need to go away from square tough blocks and just angle them in.
Yeah.
Literally
one of the
just have
races
like,
Hill did, right? Had like triangle tough blocks or something.
Oh, really?
I think
that's the move.
Yeah.
You still get
you
the
and,
signage.
You and Steve Mathis need to just re-engineer all the safety. The net, he was the net guy.
That's right.
You're gonna be the tough block guy.
Yeah. I do. Maybe we need to sit down and have a cordial conversation. Nah, but I think that's really the thing because it's like, it's only your foot pegs that get it.
Yeah, it is.
And they're literally foot peg height. And like, but the reason they need them there, like, obviously you need something on the track and then all of the sponsors, like, that would make a considerable
amount of
money.
Or I was thinking, like in all of the areas where it would suck to hit one, like on the face of a triple or on the landing of a triple, make those boxes and then use real tough blocks in other spots.
Yeah, because that's actually probably a pretty good point because like you kind of, especially on the inside of like the turns that we were talking about, like how the boxes kind of probably weren't far enough.
Yeah.
It's like they're probably too easy to hit and just like kind of cruise through them, you know?
Yeah, like inside of turns would be good and then like, I've had them where you get squirrely and whoops and like go over the bars and land on a tough block and it doesn't even hurt. That's
so,
nice.
So, well, that's the move then. Like maybe it is. But do we really need tough blocks on the up ramps and down ramps and triples? Like, is that even a play? And then
it's,
on
it's
a finish
just
line?
As a marker, like take off here and land here kind of thing. But like those things suck when you hit them.
But yeah, but do we need to have like like do you need to know where to take off and land on it? Like if you've made it,
well,
that
like
far,
at a test track, a lot of times we'll get like. It's like a cheater line where like the edge of the triple goes like this and then you hit it like at a half.
Yeah.
Like a little half lip to stay low.
Yep.
It'll save you a couple seconds.
Yeah. Okay. Fair enough. So. Yeah. But I think that, maybe that's just like the easy fix there. Maybe we don't even have to re-engineer the tough blocks. Maybe you just run the boxes on the up and the down ramps and then.
We'll just go back to circle track racing.
Dude, concrete walls inside and outside. So did you watch the 450 stuff?
Live, I did.
What did you think?
It was sweet. I thought it was cool. Like there's just I don't know, like there's a certain aspect with like having a line back up when like it's like, oh yeah, Tomek's in the lead, of course he's gonna win. Having a line back up, watch him fight through the field again. The only thing that did suck that at that venue was the start couldn't be that long.
And it was
like it just like felt like you got on the gas and then got off and you were just like hitting people elbow to elbow and then like trying to get out of the carnage. But yeah, I think like when I think the start's supposed to be a little longer here, so
yeah, it will be for sure.
One
thing I think with the formats that so like I was watching with Sammy and he was like, ah fuck, I like 20s, like the, I'm into the 20. But I think that with this series in particular, I actually think that you'd be doing the rest of the guys a disservice because like if you do a 20, Tomac's lapping people probably like four times. Kenny's lapping people four times. Like it's probably not good for the because this is, I think this series is going to take a couple of years to build. But dude, some of those French dudes in the lights class was sick. Like they had some like good speed and like way better than people probably expected them to be.
So
I think those formats are probably good for those guys.
And there's probably a statistic that like if you looked at it, it was like at the end of the races, the least amount of passing goes on, right?
It kind of
loses interest. Like there's been times obviously where you see like Cooper running a guy down for on the last lap or something like that, but like
that's at one spot and two guys. It's not like a whole field
exactly
making moves.
And then you're dealing with lappers and like that sucks. So like to have everybody like reline back up and then not have to worry about lapping anybody else, like it's just you get to focus on the, you know, the race in front of you. It's definitely like if people like 20s, then keep that in America. Like you can still enjoy that type of racing and then watch this if you're, you know, it doesn't have to be divided. Like you can just enjoy your dirt bike racing and watch both.
No, I definitely agree with that. So I guess that's a good segue into, I guess, who is this series for? Because of all of the, even people that I know that are all for this series, they're just like, fuck, I don't think they're going to get the riders. I don't, like, I want them to do great. I want this thing to work. I don't think they're going to get the big names. I don't think they're going to be able to make it happen, especially this next year, especially the year after. Like, as a rider now and someone that's, like, been in the mix, like, who do you see, like, riding here? And who do you see building this thing up over the next few years? Do we need those big guys?
I mean, I think here and there you do.
Yeah.
Like you need, you know, the wild card guys to show up and gain some interest. But then again, like a guy like me and Brayton, like it's perfect for us. And like that kind of alleyway where it's like kind of over the grind, you're over like, I don't know, like there's something about this, not something about it, it's the people behind this that are like I have a question I ask and it's like, oh yeah, like let me help you, like, you know, like let's sort this out. Like, and some of the Supercross stuff, like either people didn't know or like I felt like I was like being an asshole by asking questions, and it was like I felt like I was like stepping on people's toes the whole time, where this is like it's for the riders, like, and if like they can't get the big names, then like maybe the big names to try it out, see how they like it, and if they don't, then you know there's always the other series. But and not to talk shit on AMA Supercross, like it gave me everything I've had in my life, but at the same time, like this is fun, like it's enjoyable as a racer to show up, to travel to different countries, experience different fan groups, and experience a whole nother like side of the sport that like didn't exist, literally like just came about this year. So it's a really like, it's a cool thing, like it's a really really cool like evolution in our sport, and it doesn't have to be something that takes over Supercross or motocross or anything like that. It can just be another form, like think about how many different forms of auto racing there are, like rally F1, you know, the GT
and
Cup
we
stuff.
Watch them all.
You watch them all, you love racing, watch them all, like if you love motocross, watch outdoors, watch MXGP, watch, you know, this Supercross, everything. It's just another, like, I don't know, another opportunity to have a name in the sport and have make a little bit of money and have some fun.
And I think, like, I mean, that was one of the things, I mean, I'd even said it a couple times like on podcasts, I'm like, bro, they get Cooper Webb, they get they get Jason Anderson, they get Villopoto, they get Carmichael, they get Chad, Dino's been here every, like, there's a reason. Like, there's a reason why. Like, you could offer someone $1 million right now to go and race, like, this sketchy dog shit Supercross race in, like, nowhere, and you're turning it down if it ain't right. You know, so it's like, it's not just money that makes people come back, and it's not just money that makes people come back over and over and over. And, like, you could see how many guys would have came to do this if, like, if they were allowed to do this. So I think that and I think, you know, like guys like Barsha and guys like Coop and like guys that are kind of, they don't have to do the Dungey thing and retire at 27 or the Villopoto thing and retire at 27. Like, there's only so long you can do like that grind that you talked about, and now it's like we've got a bunch of dudes that are like on that cusp. Coop Supercross only next year, Eli Supercross only next year. So what's to say you don't like travel the world with your family and like not have, because you don't have to be grinding the week before the race, because you're flying and then you're going to Urban Surf and then you you know, like you're going and eating, like you're doing the press tour, you know.
And it's also like when you ask like who's it for, like think about how many really good rides there are versus how many really good riders there are.
100%.
And you might not get the top five guys showing up here every single weekend, but like if you don't want to ride on a team that you're not comfortable lining up with, then like there's probably a spot over here. Like, and so like I think that,
and
like
good teams too, like Craig Dack Racing, dude, is like legit as fuck.
It's solid. So I think like this year, you know, being a pilot season, and maybe next year it might, you might not get some of that stuff, but like the third year and fourth year, I think it's going to be like, oh well, you know, I couldn't land a deal on, you know, a factory team, but I have this opportunity to go have a lot of fun and race and be competitive. And
dude, we saw that with Colt Nichols.
Yeah,
he literally didn't have a ride and then went to Rick Ware, and then as like, you know, fate turned out, he ends up getting the Honda ride. But it's like that was the perfect scenario. Bogle, perfect scenario. And they're like two amazing Supercross riders.
And that's what, like, had I retired and this been in, you know, on the horizon, like I would have been like ready to go the very next year, even maybe even the same year.
I think we're sort of on the same page. And to be honest, all of the shit talk and all of like the, it's good. Like, hasn't it been fun to like watch it play out? Like, if we're honest,
but if you're gonna talk shit out, you're probably watching it too.
100%. Dude,
like it's and if you're not, like, you're just missing out. So it's, I don't know, it's like everything's so divided now. It's like everything in our world, it's like, dude, You like Supercross? Watch it. Like,
Is it as good as A1? I don't know. Up to you. Like, you be the judge, but does it really matter?
Yeah.
Also, it's free.
Yeah.
That's like people that talk shit on anything on the internet that's free. It's like, hey, bro, I'll give you back your money. Oh, wait, you didn't pay for it? Okay, cool. I guess we're even then.
Yeah. Whatever.
I think from what I understand, next year, like, there's going to be some places that we're going to that Supercross has literally never been. And they're like hardcore motorsport fans. And I think Jakarta was kind of on the cards this year, but maybe the stadium or something wasn't quite ready.
Yeah.
But like, bro, there's...
I know, I was like...
So sick.
My wife and I were like, okay, we're going to go. Because Genova was supposed to come with us to this one, and he couldn't make it. But we were going to do... It was going to be sick. We're going to go to Hawaii, stay at his house in Hawaii on the way here, and then... do this race in Australia and then go to Indonesia. I was like, dude, this
straight
is the
to Bali,
life right here.
That's what MotoGP's like.
Yeah.
Like those guys, I mean, I think Aleix Espargaró went from Philippi, they were in like Singapore, which is dope. And then they went like Japan, that's dope. Like,
yeah.
Dude, Japan's like the coolest place
in
the world.
Oh my God, I love Japanese cars.
Yeah, like, dude, for sure. Food.
Yeah, so... When I got to go to Japan, I was in heaven.
Can you imagine racing in Tokyo?
I know. Yeah, hopefully something like that happens.
Want it.
Yeah. Yeah, if we get to go to Tokyo, I got like 10 friends that are going to be like,
pumped.
Yeah, pumped to go.
But even like, think about how dope that would be content-wise.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Like, imagine if we all go to Tokyo the week, like, you got to go the week before.
Oh, I'd go like 2 weeks and I go try to,
dude,
there's like so many
shit.
Drift tracks
yeah,
out there that I've
yeah.
just been dying to drive.
Yeah, nah, I'm like, I'm all about that shit.
Yeah.
But yeah, like Aleix Espargaró went from Phillip Island to then spend a week in like Bali, and then they've got like their next raid. Like, so you just kind of like hop it. And again, it's like nobody, I think that's like an overlooked thing. Nobody can just go back on a Monday and be back on the cycle bike and then doing their motos and then in the gym. And then that's Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday's off, Saturday's at the race and doing it all. Like, no one can do it. So no one's losing out.
I know. And yeah, it feels even. Like, even like showing up here, like, I didn't feel anybody had, and that's kind of a cool part about this new format is like nobody has like a crazy advantage from being
the fittest dude in the world. Yeah.
So like, it's going to change training a little bit. So I don't know, but like, the training for Supercross and Motocross sucks.
Yeah.
Like, unless you're like Dungey, and you enjoy that, like, cause you're really good at it. But like a guy like me, I hated it. Like, it was just so grueling, and like, I've had some opportunities to go back racing. Like, this coming year is my first year of eligibility to go back to the lights class.
Oh, yeah.
And when people heard that, like, I got some phone calls, and I'm like, dude, I already proved myself one time. Like, I've already, like,
lived my dream out
way further than I thought I could. And it's like, I don't want to go back to, like, working my ass off every single weekend for, like, less enjoyment than what I'm going to get here.
Yeah.
Like, there's the quality of life is, like, it's rad for me. Like, I get to have fun, live out another like bucket list item that I wanted to do, and like make a little bit of money from it. Like, it's this series is like exactly what I needed.
Yeah No, it's so cool. And I think point I was kind of gonna make before, and then I got sidetracked about drift cars, but like you go to Indonesia, right? Everything's a motorcycle. Everything's a scooter or a motorbike.
Yeah.
And then every scooter has like Repsol or like Petronas on it. Like, they're super, super, super into it. And like, when we did the Casey Stoner podcast, dude, we got like 100,000+ downloads on the first week of just the audio from Indonesia.
No way.
So like, it just... that motorcycles is like crazy over there, and to build up that fan base of Supercross over there, I mean, the people are there and they're all riding, and like you ride through there. I lived in Bali for like the first 2 months of the year, and like everywhere you go there's like a bike with a monster sticker on it, or like
people,
like they're into it, but they don't have like, it's not like in California where they've got Paris and
just
they've got Parler and
the
they've
local
got
track and
yeah,
on
like
a Tuesday and just see every pro that you watch on TV.
Yeah, it's a different vibe, but like they're still kind of into it, you know. And I think that to have those, to be like dipping into those places, like the Middle East, dude. Like, no one spends more money on motorsports in the Middle East, and it's like not serviced,
right?
You know, so it's like take the show there, and it's like you're gonna have people just frothing.
Yeah, no, it's gonna be sweet. I haven't seen. I don't think they've actually like. told many people about the actual list for next year, but from what I've heard, like rumors, it sounds like it's going to be a really rad, like, world tour that we're going to be on.
Yeah, boys on tour. I like it. So what else have you got in the mix? You got any more builds coming up? You still doing the YouTube stuff? Or?
Yeah, it kind of came to a screeching halt when I started training for this. But I'm moving to Idaho, so at the end of the month. So like my plan is to, like, in the winters there, because they're pretty gnarly, get a lot of snow. So I would like to kind of pick back up on the build stuff and kind of get that ball rolling. Maybe do some West Coast rounds.
That'd be sick. I'd be stoked if you did that.
Yeah, it's not, nothing's for sure, but like I really enjoy riding with Mitch and Vince, and especially Vince. Like, he really wants to be a better rider, and he like takes pointers really well. So I've been kind of working with him a little bit at the track, and
that's cool.
I kind of want to keep that ball rolling and help him out, help the team out. And Mitchell when he wants it, and maybe if I'm feeling good riding with those guys, maybe I'll line up, I don't know yet, and then roll into this whole thing next year. But yeah, I need to get back on the YouTube thing. People ask me about it all the time, and
do you enjoy doing it?
Yeah, I really do.
It's a lot of work.
Yeah, it's a lot of like if somebody told me like, hey, tomorrow you need to film this and you need to have it done by this time and then edited and posted by this time, like I would be good at that. But it's like, I lack the creativity when it's like,
when you got all the time in the world.
Yeah, what should I, like, would people even like that? Like, I just have, like, too many questions in my head. And, like, trying to, like, plan out, like, okay, well, like, the suspension needs to go out now because it's not going to be back for 2 months or 3 months. And then there might be a delay on that. And then, like, powder coating takes this long.
Dude,
and
it's actually hard to get that shit lined up.
If I'm going to really be serious about it, which I want to be in the future, I need to do like two or three at a time, which it costs a lot. But I do want to go down that road. Like, I have this 125 that I am building that I want to build as a giveaway bike.
Yeah. Have you done one of them yet?
I did one with the 110, but it was kind of like, just like, I don't know. I had the 110. And I was like, I was kind of just sitting here. I might as well like kind of
do something with it.
Get my feet wet in the giveaway world with that. But the 125 I think is going to be sick, and I think people are going to be really interested in that. But kind of like now it kind of depends on what manufacturer I'm with. So for now, Honda. So, you know, I would like to do another two-stroke build, maybe an outdoor bike kind of thing. So I don't know. I love it though. I love building bikes. Like, it's like having my own personal touch on everything, and like taking everything apart is so fun to me.
Yeah, dude, I just, there's something about it too. Like, we haven't released any of ours yet because, dude, like, you're right, the shit just takes so fucking long. Like, I just built my like dream 350, and I got like MX Tech all the new A kit shit on it, and like W built wheels. My dad Cerakoted all the cases, like dynoed the thing, got the Vortex. Like, it is so schmick. But I'm trying to get Sleater to like test it. Because I want other, like, I want someone else to say what it's like not me, because obviously I'm going to say it's good. And like, I'm trying to get Casey to ride it. And then I'm trying to get Caroli to do like a video call about like 350s and rates. So I'm trying to do like a cool video.
Yeah.
That's not just like,
it's a lot putting of work,
the parts on the bike. And then I'm like down there talking to Tony, and he's like, dude, I'll talk about the 350. Like, Mike was the only guy to ever win a national on one. I'm like, actually, that's true. He was.
350s are sick, dude.
Yeah. Did you ever own one?
I never owned one, but Vital MX built one.
That's right.
Yeah. It was like I think it was a Twisted Development build.
Was that the one that where they just went like no budget?
I don't know if it was it was like their goal was to take a 350 and make more power than a 450.
Yeah.
Like stock 450. And that thing was like crazy to ride. Because it was sick. Like, it had like a little bit less low end, like less hit, which I like. Like, I don't like my bikes to be super fast. At least 450 is super fast off the bottom. But it would rev to the moon. Yeah. And it made so much power up top. Like, it was a really fun bike to ride.
Yeah, no, I love mine. Roan's actually got to ride mine the other day. He was loving it too. Yeah. But like third, fourth gear, just like, oh.
They rev so far. It's like they rev like a 250 with like more. They're so fun.
Yeah, no, I think that, well, I'm the same. Like, I mean, I've talked about it like a million times. But like, just for me, I ride once a week. And I just can't ride a 450.
Yeah.
And like the first two rides, I'm like, dude, maybe I like 450s. And then as soon as it starts to get like kind of rough and then the track gets a bit dry, I'm like, fuck, I actually can't ride this that's bike anymore.
Like for a while when people would ask me like, what bike should I get? Like when I just got my KTM, I was like, dude, get a 350. Like if you're not going to race, then get a 350. And even if you want to race it, you can still race it, but might not be as competitive. But like if you're just having fun, like it was a really fun bike to ride.
Yeah, it just feels like, I feel like all the way I tell it to people, because I'm the same, I just always recommend, like if you're not like a hardcore brand loyalist, then you just gotta get a 350. Yeah. I just feel like my odds of going home from the track feeling like I had a good day and not just getting like beat up, and like, dude, I raced I had to race a 450 at Manji this year. Because I just, last year I drove over, but it's like a 4-day drive.
Oh,
and
shit.
I was like, I'm not doing that this year. And I couldn't get a 350.
Yeah.
And I borrowed a 450 and I fucking sucked, bro. And like, I just came off.
Beats the shit out of you.
Oh, dude. And I just came off riding that Stark in Barcelona.
Yeah. I was supposed to go to that.
Oh,
I didn't
really
get my passport in time though.
Oh, actually, I think I remember you saying that.
Yeah.
Bro, that thing is ridiculous.
Yeah,
like, have you rode Altas yet?
No, I haven't. I've never, like,
so you never rode an e-bike?
No. I was, for 10 years, I was a Honda.
Yeah.
So, when I finally retired, it was cool to, like, kind of try a couple different bikes. But, like, I really haven't done much riding other than Honda in the last over a decade.
Yeah. Yeah, dude, that thing will blow your mind when you get to ride it. Like, it's actually insane. But I just couldn't, the difference between riding in Barcelona, like I felt like that was the best I ever rode a bike. And it's just the way that I was describing it to people is like, especially on 450s, pretty much like you get into a turn and you hit the throttle and the bike wants to go up.
Yeah.
So like you basically have to like lean and like you're just constantly like compensating for the bike wanting to go up. And when you don't ride every single day and you're not like tuned in with your bike to like exactly the way that it's gonna move,
yeah,
then like I'm just gun shy, you know. And I'm not, and then especially coming out of turns in like braking bumps or like anytime there's like kickers and shit, just that it felt like real reactive, and I couldn't predict the reactions,
right?
Because I feel like that's what's happening with you guys. Like you've done so many laps and you're so dialed in that you just, that feeling's almost like nullified in a sense, because you just know exactly what's coming. Whereas for me, that's not what it feels like. This bike, none of that. You just like hit the throttle and it doesn't go up. It actually feels like it goes down and in.
Really?
Because all you're getting is the chain.
Right.
That's like literally the only force that's on the
bike.
There's
no like gyrating.
Nah, so there's no up and out feeling.
Yeah.
It's like a down and in, like a squat.
That's
so, and then it feels like you want to get even more over the front, which kind of like gives you more front end feel.
Yeah.
So like the whole balance of like riding a bike is
that's
completely
cool.
different.
Yeah. I'm really interested to try one.
Yeah.
That sounds sweet.
Yeah. So.
And I've been like, it's cool. There's no clutch. Like I've always been like a big advocate of no clutch. So like that motion you're talking about of like standing up, I feel like a lot of people get that from like dumping the
letting
clutch out
the clutch
of a turn.
That was me. So I went to, that's one of the big things. So first of all, I think when you ride the Varg, because there's no clutch, I was like hitting my chin on my bar pad constantly.
Really?
Because the thing has so much fucking power and you have no clutch to like pull to like you essentially like I was using the clutch to just like stop the bike coming up, and my body position was like shit.
Yeah.
So then when you on the Varg, you have to lean forward like as you go, which is what like Townley would coach me to do that. So he'd be like, when you're accelerating, you need to compensate and move forward. But when you've got the clutch, you're just like, and you're stopping it from doing it.
Yeah.
So you kind of never actually.
That's what I've always like. That's always been my thing when I was racing. Like when you use the clutch a lot, you're just creating like unneeded energy.
Yeah.
And like, I've never been the most in shape guy in the world. So I was always like really critical about my technique and like figuring out ways to make riding and racing like less, I don't know, enduring.
Yeah.
Like I wanted to make it as easy as possible.
Yeah.
I think Musquin's really good at that too. But like don't use the clutch, because it's just like, you're just making the bike just like pissed off and like the energy of the
like
bike's
reacting.
Like not happy. So.
Yeah, well, this kind of takes away that. And I, for the first time, like, we looked at the footage after, and I was like, holy shit, like, that's how I would like to ride.
Yeah.
But it was just because you couldn't lean on using the clutch. And, but yeah, so it just, like, literally put me in the right position, and, like, I lost that
that's
reactivity.
Sick.
And then I think, like, with the way the back end squats, and then it means you have to go forward. So like literally everything's just getting like more centered. Yeah. Like you feel kind of more on rails. Went straight to Manji, rode a 450 and I was just like,
just everything out the door.
Dude, I was like, it was actually, I went in, Townley was like laughing at me. Like I was riding that shit. He's like, what the fuck are you doing?
Be cool too to like actually have one that's like set up for you, like suspension wise and like maybe like a clamp adjustment, you know, like it'd be sweet. Like, if you got like a month with that thing, how like much your riding technique would change.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I hopefully I can get one, and I would love to just go like ridiculous build. Like go to technical touch, get like a kit, you know what I mean? Like just go. But the you kind of can't do that much with them. Like there's not that much.
Yeah, like, there'll be a market for it though.
I think there will be, but you could do like suspension. I mean, the clamps are insane. Like the the ones that come stock on them are like ridiculous. Foot pegs are ridiculous. Like all you could really do would be like a set of wheels, some handlebars, like a fucking seat cover.
I'll figure out a way to black that thing out. Don't worry.
Yeah, dude. So I'm keen.
Yeah,
keen to get one. Well, fucking appreciate it. Yeah, thanks for coming on, eh?
No, it's good to be in person. Maybe if we get time tomorrow, we can.
Yeah, we might do some like post practice reporting.
Yeah, some post practice. We should do during.
Calling
guys out.
Yeah.
That guy's using too much clutch.
Let's just full go clutch police. Is there any Aussie guys you're excited to watch? Do you know any of the dudes over there?
Meddy's riding, right?
Yeah, Meddy's riding. Yeah, factory KTM.
Yeah, I'm excited to see him ride again.
Yeah.
Everybody that I think everybody I've already seen race. Like I don't know if I had seen Clout before.
Dude, he's good and didn't get I don't think he got to show his potential last weekend. He's really good. And so is Tanny.
Yeah, Tanny, I ran into him.
Oh, really? Oh, when he crashed?
The first moto, I ran into him. It was kind of like hectic and we just kind of crossed.
Yeah.
You know, nobody's fault, but yeah.
Just call him out. Just feel like, fuck you, bro. I'm coming for you. You're like done.
You got Jason Anderson on speed dial. I'm taking you out. I'm excited to see. Is Tanny racing?
Yep.
Okay, so him and Clout, Meddy, Brayton.
Oh, yeah, because JB will be doing double duty.
Yeah.
That'll be pretty sick.
Yeah, so I don't know, but like, I don't think there's anybody that I haven't. I'm excited. Why I see him say Meddy is I haven't seen him race in so long.
Yeah.
Especially in person.
Dude, he's riding so good.
I saw him today. He's like, I was like, didn't recognize him. He got long hair, long beard. I was what's up, dude?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I know he did. He had a really good season here. I think he get fourth in the championship this year, Meddy? Yeah. Yeah, he was right there for third in the championship.
That's sick.
And it was like, it was gnarly. Him and Todd Waters spent every moto all year.
Battling. Really?
Yeah. That's sick. He almost won Manji. So
no way.
Yeah, he got second. Todd won by like 1 point.
Oh.
Came down to the last moto. Like,
glad I didn't go then. If Maddie's there, I'm not winning.
Oh, dude. Tanny was.
Remember Southwick, like 10 or 11 bike run out again? Oh.
He's a beast.
Heartbreaking.
Dude, I love that guys are racing longer.
Yeah.
Like it seems like a lot of, like, dude, JB, man, actually, we should talk about that. JB figured this whole shit out before everybody.
Oh, yeah.
Like, he's been on this program for a really long time. Didn't tell anyone about it. Just did his deal. Just
made his extra whatever amount of money and,
and he's cashed out. He's just been killing it. Now everyone's following suit.
Yeah, no, he had the program figured out years ago.
Yeah.
No outdoors, I'm going overseas. <That's> so and then he'd show up to A1, like, ready.
Yeah.
Like, he always said that. He's like, I had a gate dropped like a month ago. Like, I'm not stressing at all.
Yeah. Yeah. And then wins Daytona. The oldest dude to ever win a main event.
I was so stoked about that. I think that was on my birthday. And I think it was 2 rounds after I did my pelvis.
Yeah.
So I had a hospital bed brought to my house. I was actually renting Ken Roczen's house in Florida.
Yeah, right.
It was a spare house. And I was in my hospital bed in my living room, like on my birthday, watching like my mentor won. It was such a cool moment.
How did you guys first link up? Because I don't remember. Like, I just feel like I don't really know about that connection.
Yeah, so 2009 it would have been. Brayton was on MDK KTM.
Yeah.
And
so it goes back that far.
So that was when we met initially. Was his mechanic, Rich Simmons. When he went to Joe Gibbs the next year in 10 or whatever. Yeah. Rich came over to work for me.
Yeah.
At Toyota Designs. And it's a funny story because I forget who it was, but I mean, granted, I didn't have credentials then, but somebody got the job to work for me at Toyota Designs. And a mechanic, and when they found out they were going to be working for me, he's like, "Oh, that guy won't do anything. Like, I'm not. He didn't show up to work.
No shit."
And like, Rich was second in line, and Rich and I, like, we went from Troy Designs to, you know, we won like 5 races together, had a great career on Troy Designs, and then I brought him to Factory Honda. So it was like this 9-year span of like just awesome, you know, that relationship with Rich. But Rich was the one that connected JB and I.
Yeah, right.
So yeah, that's
yeah. So I just didn't know, like,
they were living together still, yeah. And like, so he was like, "Hey, like, Justin invited you on a mountain bike ride, you know," and we had the same trainer at the same time, like in the gym.
Yeah.
So we kind of just developed this relationship, and it was like, at the time, like, I was just like young and like, I don't know anything. So like, yeah, this guy wants to share knowledge with me, like, and he seems really smart. Like, I should probably just do everything he tells me to do.
Man, I always liked JB, but he was a guy I never, like, I'd always say good day and I'd always like have a quick chat, but I never like got too deep with him.
Yeah.
And then when he come over to Oz, it was like 2019. I just built that studio and I was like, he was there. I was like, "All right, I'd love to get Brayton on the podcast." He blew my mind.
Yeah,
like,
so
he,
smart.
I don't know if you listened to it, but that was one of my favorite podcasts of any that we've ever done. Yeah. He like gave me some great books to read, and like just the level of like the lack of ego.
Yeah,
that he has is like it's mind blowing.
Yeah,
like you just don't meet many people that have like that calm like nature that he has, but then is also such a savage.
Yeah,
and just like so consistent over so many years of like being that guy.
Yeah,
you know, it's not like there's waves where he's like in and out of that dude. Like, he literally is that dude, and it is so solid.
Yeah, he's just like, if I ever have like a question related to moto, call him. If I ever like have a question related to life, call him. Like, he is just like such a solid dude to like have in your back pocket to call, and I just never, you know, took that for granted, I guess.
That's so sick. And then to end up like in this deal with him like that.
Yeah,
so that,
well, he's the one that I called like when we talked. Like, I talked to Tony and Mike and I was like, "Hey, like, what do you think?" And he's like, "Dude, they're so solid." Like, so like that was like where my standard was, like, JB says they're good, they're good.
Yeah That's awesome, dude. Yeah. All right, well, thanks so much for doing this.
Yeah, no,
that was
worries.
Fun, man.
Yeah,
it was like cool to hopefully we'll be able to do a lot more, like California. And dude, it'd be sick, like, so next year if we can get the setup done in California to where we have like the big studio, I would love to go watch practice and qualifying and then zip down the freeway, get in the studio, crack some beers, and like do the supercross companion.
Sick.
Like, I feel like we could get
to plan something,
do like GLs around, like, imagine like me, you, GL, like,
yeah.
Like a crew, like drinking beers, doing it.
Yeah.
So yeah, hopefully we'll be able to do some more cool shit.
All right, sweet.
Awesome, bro. Oh, yeah. Appreciate it.
Thanks, dude.
Fuck yeah, dog.
Hell yeah.
Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader. Like that car right in your tail. Or if you're tailgating right now, all those cars doubling as kitchens and living rooms are on AutoTrader too. Are you working out and listening to this ad at the same time? Well, multitasking pro, cars like the ones in the gym parking lot are for sale on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on AutoTrader. Just you wait. AutoTrader.